somebody said.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
And yet, strangely, we don't see much of the Monster Mash occurring at the York Maze. I've gone all Yuri on us. Never mind, I'll keep that back, because I don't want to go into a cod or Russian accent, no matter how tempting it might be. On to the founder and creator of course, the York Maze. Something, Jessica, hopefully you'll be able to join us on Saturday when our next location report takes place at the York Maze. Mm-hmm. On November the 1st, exactly, all sorts of, because I know last time around we all set, your heart was set on coming up to Countryside Live.
I was really disappointed.
Exactly. This time round, Ed Wellman and yourself will be joining myself as we head off to the fabulous York Maze for Hallow Scream. Hallow Scream, Tom Piercy, are you there? Very scary. Tom Piercy is the Chief Executive Officer and founder of the York Maze, which, of course, in the summer is nice and bright and cheerful and full of really happy sort of Halloween sort of based stuff if you go to York Maze. But, of course, when we come around to Hallow Scream, it's a whole different experience. I'll run the video now so you can actually sort of experience that strange world. I think, in fact, is that you, Tom, wandering through the mail? Tell us, what's happening? What are you doing? We've just seen you pass by on camera. That is you, Tom Piercy. Whoa.
It is indeed, yes. Basically, Hallow Scream kind of came round when I, if you watch the film, it shows me unearthing some bones under the ground of York Maze. And when we looked into what these bones were and where they came from, it turned out that they were animal bones. And further transpired, there had been a circus based on the farm back in 1873.
A circus based on the farm.
And there was a tragedy occurred, and the circus burned down, killing many people plus many animals, and these creatures and humans all come back to haunt the farm at Halloween, unfortunately.
I'm thinking this could be a bit scary for a lass from New Zealand, even though you are used to hobbits.
Yes, friendly people.
Friendly people. So thankfully, there's a daytime maze as well as a nighttime maze, as far as this is
we have two very different events. Our daytime's kind of running through Halloween half term, and it's all about the pumpkins and the niceness, and we have pantomimes and lots of fun things for little kids. Mm. But then on the evening, it kind of flips over and becomes all a bit sinister, and we have five live action haunted houses.
Five live-action haunted houses.
Yes,
now,
indeed.
I mean, Natalie Tuck and myself, and of course Natalie's mother, who also joined us in the summer, were pretty much bemused by the loss of senses that we had when we were walking through that particular area. Is this as challenging?
Well, the House of Confusion, which you visited in the summer, becomes reincarnation for the evenings, and basically it's full of demented clowns. So you go through the same experience.
So just like teaching at Lincoln, then, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we turn the lights off, fill it with haunted clowns, and then we set you free in it, and it's quite an experience. And that's just one of the attractions. We have another one called Barnageddon, which you get into a lift and you're transported into an underworld full of demented, haunted lunatics, which is very exciting. We have the Difference Engine, which is kind of based on an early Victorian binary computing device, which separates people into ones and zeros. And you have basically it's kind of all about black and white, and it's very disorientating and a little bit crazy. So you can look forward to that one. We have the Freak Show, which is kind of does what it says on the can. It starts off as a Victorian freak show, but then there's something to do with werewolves and soldiers, and it all goes a little bit wrong after that, so you can enjoy that one. And the final attraction is our new one, which is called 1873, where we have built a time travel device to take you back to Victorian New York to look for the culprit of the circus fire and try and find the haunted streets of the city.
Is there any question this is obviously one of the attractions of the country? Nick, does Hallow Scream appeal to your good self as a Norwich lad?
Yes, it does, actually.
Yeah,
it does. Well, I love York anyway. I'm a mega fan of York and Yorkshire and Yorkshire people. Fantastic. Spent a lot of time up there. But this really does have an appeal.
I noticed that York Maze, Tom, is offering the UK's biggest cash prize of £2,000. I'll say that again. £2,000! English ones, of course, not euros. For growing a UK record-breaking pumpkin.
Indeed.
The shot of you, presumably that's not CGI that we've actually got there sitting by that, because I mean that's a pretty significant pumpkin. That's a huge pumpkin.
The competition was held last Saturday, yes. And the winner was from Middlesbrough, who brought his half ton pumpkin on a lorry down from Middlesbrough.
Good.
Wow. Not that I like to boast, but my word, in the borough we have some mighty big pumpkins. So there you are. That's life. A little bit of triumph from of course the north. So Jessica, any quick questions for Tom Pearcey? What sort of things? I mean, are you looking forward to the Halloween at York Maze?
I think it'll be very interesting. To be brutally honest,
yes,
with you,
yes.
I'm not a huge Halloween fan.
No.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay.
But
you're coming to exactly the wrong place, I can assure you.
But I'd be very interested.
Think of it as cultural
around.
Studies, Jessica. Think of it as cultural routine. Think of it as typical British approach. think of it as the kind of things that basically would make New Zealand go independent. Kat, what are your thoughts?
Do you know, I love Halloween. Mm. Now, isn't York one of the most haunted places in the country as well? Mm. So it's the most perfect place to go for Halloween. Mm. I've got a question, actually. You've got your pumpkin there, and the biggest one, obviously, is going to be winning this wonderful prize. Right. Are they actually going to be carving it?
It's already carved. You guys are coming on Saturday, which is the last day of our daytime and nighttime events.
Yeah. It's already
been carved into. It kind of looks like a kind of weird clown's face. So you'll be able to see it when you come down. It's quite
amazing.
Interesting. And we also held a carving competition on Sunday, and the winner of the carving competition had carved my face into a pumpkin, which was weird in
That's
the extreme.
And that's just part and parcel of the Tom Pearcey World of Delights that you can actually find out, obviously, on yorkmaze.com. That's yorkmaze.com, and then because you have a direct link there to the Halloween at York Maze and so on and so forth. Extraordinary stuff there. I know if you're free on Saturday, come along and join us.
Oh, it'd be nice, yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not. But
he's in Norwich, photographing rock stars. What can you say?
Well, if you can make it, just bring a spare pair of underpants and you'll be fine.
Marvellous.
Now, you know, it's Jessica's first ever routine. We don't say, you know, Jessica, make sure you got a spare pair of undies, please. It's just not a way forward. You know, we've got Ed Wellman as well. Who knows what could happen on that basis? It's going to be fun. It's the Halloween at York Maze. Brilliant stuff. Jessica, because we forgot completely, well, I didn't quite forget, but we had to move on with Anna. We've got to throw those last two questions at you. Would you like to do the business with Tom Pearcey, please?
Yes. Have you enjoyed the midweek drive today?
I always enjoy my evenings with Alex.
And will we be hearing from you in the future?
You'll be hearing from me on Saturday when you all come to visit Alan's
screen. You see, that's what we like about Tom. He tells it like it is. Fantastic. Tom Pearcey, we salute you. Take care now.
Okay, thanks, guys. See you soon.
Just Nick, that we haven't really had many heavy rock tracks on the programme this evening, which is a fair point. You know, you can actually quite rightly say it's all been very light. I mean, obviously we had 12N, etc., but no Motorhead, no Metallica. The Rock Show, of course, is hosted regularly on Siren every year, I think second Thursday of every month, and that's a wonderful go-to place. But we will be having some rock tracks coming in before too long. But as we said in the model of the ideal sort of line for how to feature Nick's single collection, and we look forward to doing Merry Christmas, Everybody, with Slade.
Indeed.
You've worked with Noddy Holder, of course, and Dave Hill, etc. Roy Wood of Wizard.
Yep.
Exactly.
The legend who is Roy.
And the Pogues.
The Pogues.
Fairy Tale of New York. It's always.
Yes.
And it'll kind of alternate with the magic that is Michelle Monroe, won't it, Michelle? How are you?
Good evening, Alex. I'm fine, thank you. No rock from my side tonight, I'm afraid.
did you never get the feeling that your dad, actually, Matt Monroe, ultimately wanted to cut an album where he kind of ripped his shirt to shreds and just sort of, you know, did a kind of leap through with his guitar and sort of, you know, strike the axe and just rock out?
Well, actually, now that you've mentioned it, no.
So there you go. Anyway,
no, he actually, when he let go, he did jazz blues, which he loved. But he did a couple of rock and roll shows on the road with Jess Conrad, who at the time was a big name with, you know, Mystery Girl and Cherry Pie and things like that. And it was a rock and roll show. Mm. But Dad fitted in and did his thing, and it still went down well.
Well, you see, that I think is the whole point about it. Ultimately, it's good music, isn't it, Nick?
Oh, God, yeah. Matt was a legend, definitely.
Exactly.
One of the all-time great Bond themes.
Yes, I agree with you there.
From Russia with Love, Jessica.
Indeed.
You're wondering. Yeah, in fact,
Proper James Bond.
Whenever they do a countdown of the top, you know, Bond hits, From Russia with Love always gets voted in within the top five, so it's rather nice.
And nice for Yuri as well, who, of course, we mentioned on the show earlier. You know, the sort of script is put together. Yuri's a photographer, by the way, Michelle, in case you're wondering. What Yuri? Where are we going here? Anyway, thanks to fabulous Richard Moore at Mint Audio Restoration.
Oh, yes.
Everything's all sorted out, so you can share with us. In fact, a little bit of time, Michelle, to sort of just explain how these recordings, because I was explaining to both Nick and Kat earlier in the day how Richard works so tremendously well in terms of cleaning them all up and getting rid of all the hiss and getting them all sorted out in pristine condition.
A wonderful job. And also, EMI were very, very lazy, it turned out, for a lot of the recordings, where they chose to use mono instead of stereo. I think laziness was it a lot of the time. So Richard's not only remastered all the tracks and brought it up to sort of a modern sound, but he's, you know, converted everything to stereo and made sure that everything's top quality now. So it's very exciting for me. I mean, we've worked together now, I think, 7 years, and literally we've revamped the entire catalogue.
And before we go into the general spiel for this, I know we've been waiting for this moment for your good self, Michelle, our very own version of Siren Royalty on the Midweek Drive, to formally congratulate Jessica, who was recently down at St James's Palace as we followed through on Thursday, the journey when she was just leaving Peterborough, I think, when we actually connected
with her.
Sort of through there, to receive her gold Duke of Edinburgh Award.
Oh, wonderful. Well done, Jessica.
Thank you very much.
Well, no, I mean, when I wrote the book, The Singer, which is the biography on my dad's life, I won an award in America, believe it or not, first, the Irwin Award, and it was such a thrill. And I think, you know, if somebody acknowledges your work, whatever you do, it's a great thrill. You can't get better accolade than that, really. So well done.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Duly congratulated on that basis. Right, Michelle, it's
right,
over to
Alex.
You. Talk to us about this week.
Well, this week, Alex, I have one of my father's more obscure recordings, which was actually the B-side to one of his biggest hits, Softly As I Leave You. Now, it's a song from a little-known show called Not to Worry. It was a review with sketches, music and lyrics by Stanley Daniels, and that opened at the Garrick Theatre in London on the 22nd of February 1962. But from what I can find out, not for very long. Now, the cast included Prunella Scales, who later that same year would hit the big time in the sitcom Marriage Lines, and of course later as Sybil in Fawlty Towers. Now, Stanley Daniels may not have hit the big time himself with the show, but he went on to write for the Dean Martin Show, and he won 8 Emmy Awards for his work on the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Taxi. Now, the song in question was only recorded by one other artist, a group called The Double Four, for Capitol Records in 1963. Now, my dad's recording predates the London opening of the show by a couple of months, being taped at Abbey Road Studios on the 27th of December 1961, with Johnny Spence conducting and George Martin as producer. Well, that just about wraps up everything there is to say about the song. So other than that, Alex, is there anything else I can do for you?
Is there anything I can do for you? Anything at all I can do for you? I'd be happy. We don't have a lot, but what I've got, you've got too. Is there anything I can do for you? Is there anything I can do for you?
Superb. Nick, before we actually go into numbers and all the rest of the bits and pieces, I think you've got a few things to say. Yeah, in fact, actually, yeah, Michelle, Nick would like to meet you personally.
Ooh, ooh.
Why is that, Nick Elliott, photographer extraordinaire?
Well, I would really like to just spend some time and talk about your father, talk about your life. Fascinates me. I mean, that whole kind of period, very important part of my life. You know, the 60s, I have a very deep attachment to it. And we were just saying to Alex that Matt was considered the UK's equivalent of the American Rat Pack.
Yes, that's right.
You know, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, the true legends of where this whole thing started, really. Fantastic. Aww. Just wonderful, wonderful times.
I've just pulled around
a wonderful artist.
On Facebook, yeah, lovely. Of yourself, Michelle, holding the Matt Munro book, taken in our northern studios there, where you sort of jauntily moving headphones from one side to the other. There we are.
Yeah, we had
lovely.
Good fun, didn't we?
And we still do, Michelle. That's why we do the show on a weekly basis. Oh, indeed, fortnightly from that point of view. And astoundingly, Jessica, you found out the names of some artists that you weren't familiar with.
Yes, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, Frank. It was New Zealand, of course. I know.
No, hang on. Excuse. New Zealand does have stereo, doesn't it, and radio?
Hey, we're not that backwards. No, I'll definitely research into these.
Because
are you under 20?
Yes, I'm 19.
Okay, I forgive you.
Thank you.
I don't think it's an age thing, though, Michelle, is it?
No. I was born during the Second World War. I still know it happened.
Everybody should educate themselves with that beginning of music and those kind of artists.
You will never, ever get that calibre of stable of artists that came out of the 60s.
No.
And they're all still being played today. You know, not just once or twice, but, you know, hours of radio is taken to playing Sammy Davis and Dean Martin and Tony Bennett, bless him, who was on the other night on television. I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely fabulous.
You go back
5 years and name me an artist.
Heard a Matt Munro track played on Sounds of the 60s only a couple of months ago.
Brian Matthews,
a fantastic show.
But you see, if you tune into Siren every week, you hear Matt Munro every week. Then.
There you have it. And that's where we take that BBC Radio 2, you know.
Absolutely.
You might do one every so often, Sounds of the 60s. We bring it to you on a week, you know, every fortnight. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Lovely.
So there we are. And Kat, what did you make of the Matt Munro selection today?
Absolutely wonderful. It's great, isn't it, taking a walk down memory lane. And I'm talking to Jessica here that she's not heard of some of these amazing artists. She's now made a nice list and she's going to look them all up and she's going to educate herself in some wonderful music.
Yes, I must point out, Jessica, that it's very important when you look it up that you spell the name right. Now, it hasn't got an E at the end or a U in the middle. It's simply M-O-N-R-O, which is an anagram of moron.
There you have it. A line which was used by your father in the early days
of dealing
with press relations, actually.
Shocking.
I mean, their cat was the notion of the singing bus driver, etc., and yet, actually, he wasn't really the singing bus driver, was he, Michelle?
No, that was a total insult to the man. It really
was.
Well, you know what it was.
In those days, I mean, to have your own press secretary was a big deal. And they jumped on the wagon decker because he'd come literally for his audition with his bus suit on. He'd only been there about 10 weeks at that point and left after 13. But the thing is, it was a great, it's like a Cinderella story, you know, sort of busman makes good. And they latched onto that and it never left him. You know, it's like Britten Sinatra, again, a tag that really irritated him, but it never left him. Mm. But, you know, we have to be grateful for all sorts of things because that press also did him a lot of good. So, but I think it was all right at the beginning, but after 20 years or so, he did a little irk, you know, that he said, well, actually, I'm Matt Munro, not Sinatra. You know, and David Jacobs did a wonderful thing in America where he introduced Sinatra as the American Monroe.
I think I've actually seen that clip.
Yeah.
I think I have.
And David knew Frank Sinatra quite well, so, you know, it was tongue-in-cheek, but he meant it. It was a little dig, you know.
Yeah. Mm. Must be very careful, though, when dealing with Sinatra that he didn't have a horse's head to actually deal with. But I won't say anything else because, you know, all sorts of other issues could be working through there. And it is coming up to Halloween, so we don't want to scare.
Well, you know something, Alex? Joking apart, my dad was actually offered a contract with Reprise, which was Sinatra's label. And he so wanted to take the offer because it would have meant that possibly he could have, you know, sung with Sinatra, done an album together. But the powers that be thought it might be a rather sinister offer because obviously, as you know, once you're signed to a contract, they can dictate everything. In other words, he may never have sung or released an album again. Mm-hmm. And they thought it was that ploy, was to get him off the market so there was no competition. Yeah. So sadly, Dad listened and didn't do it. But, you know, it could have been a whole different ball game.
Probably in another time, actually.
But he did have a lot of ties, you know, with a lot of people, so they were worried about the offer.
Indeed. So, Michelle, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today?
Fabulous, because I haven't spoken to you live for a while.
No, it's been pre-rex and various other packages. It's a whole new area. And what advice would you give Nick, because he's going to start off a similar thing, but talking about artists he's worked with and favourite albums and songs and various other factors, starting, as I say, with those, the aforementioned Slade and a variety of other things for Christmas singles.
Also fantastic staple of artists as well. But then that is a long time ago. You know, you don't get that now. But starting a book he is.
You've had several books out, of course, Nick. Photography books
yes.
and things.
Yeah. Well, they're image-led books. They're not about photography. They're about my work.
Yes.
But
yes.
Yeah. So it's and I'm sure you'd be able to meet up with them in the fullness
of time. Oh, I'm sure. You know, you never know nowadays what happens.
No, that would be lovely, Michelle. It would.
We'll pass over internet email
addresses. Well, you've got my email address. Alex will make sure you've got it.
Yeah, that'd be nice. We'll have to book something up in L. Catch up in town somewhere.
Michelle Monroe, rock chick. I can see that.
I've been called worse, Alex.
So I take it, Michelle, you'll be back with us in a couple of weeks' time?
I will, Alex. Look forward to
Yay!
It.
No one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century that human affairs were being watched from the timeless worlds of space. No one could have dreamed we were being scrutinized as someone with a microscope studies creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Few men even consider the possibility of life on other planets. And yet, across the gulf of space, minds immeasurably superior to ours regarded this Earth with envious eyes. And slowly and surely, they drew their plans against us.
Certainly names who are legendary within the music business and indeed in the science fiction world. And when you actually put together the names H.G. Wells and Jeff Wayne, you get true magic. And I speak as one who certainly was a continual fan of the original War of the Worlds album and once indeed said, what a fantastic stage show this would make. Of course, it's manifested as a sensational stage show. It's currently undergoing, I can't believe it's the final arena tour, but we're delighted to be able to connect with the legendary, as mentioned, genuinely wonderful Jeff Wayne. Jeff, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for that super introduction.
It's a tremendous epoch-making album, and I say that quite deliberately. Back in 1978, who would have believed that such a marvellous thing could have actually sort of emerged, the sonorous tones of obviously Richard Burton, right the way through to obviously Justin and his marvellous sort of Forever Autumn, etc. Justin Haywood, of course, a whole range of other factors. I mean, this is just something which resonates so much that musically it's just a fantastic event.
Well, if you were asking me before it came out, would I be talking to you 36 or so years later with the history that the recordings and now the arena tours and other things that we've done would sort of grow from the original album? I would never have dreamed it would have had the life that it has had. I'm proud of it and thrilled to have worked with all the people that I have done along the way.
Julie Covington, of course, David Essex. I mean, that's the original cast. But then, just when people thought you can't possibly do it again, you jolly well went and did it again with a completely new cast, and it's still with Liam Neeson, etc. Still actually has that magic.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, it was a one of those decisions that came about a couple of years ago when I just finished a tour and went on holiday. In fact, with my family, and I listened to the original recording that I did with Richard, took with me the original script, because I hadn't revisited it in many years, and I just thought, you know, every so often I'm asked, would I ever consider re-recording it, looking at it with fresh eyes? And on this particular occasion, I thought, yeah, okay, it's a good time to revisit it. And what I discovered and remembered that, in fact, whatever wound up on the original album and the usage of Richard's voice and bringing him, so to speak, back to life and as a talking head for the first five or six tours we did, was that there was at least as much on the original album that, or the original recording that didn't make it onto the album, as there was that did. And I thought, gosh, there's a lot of rich material story-wise. And I think the largest reason that a lot of the original material didn't make it onto the double album was that it was the era of the black vinyl disc. And there were just so many minutes per side you could actually fit in that I had to make editing decisions, musical ones as well. But now, all these years later, I'm looking at it and listening to it again, and I thought, well, if I was to start all over again, I would include a lot of what the story could have been, and particularly for the live arena shows that we were doing, it was a natural to extend it. So in a way, that triggered off the new double album, because I was convinced there was a good reason for doing it. And I extended, therefore, the story. Richard, as a statistic, had 74 sequences, and Liam Neeson now has 90. And by opening up the story, it opened up opportunities on a musical level and all sorts of other things, so that the whole new recording is just that. It's brand new, new artists. And our last production and our next one incorporates everything that was on the new approach. It's still the War of the Worlds in its heart and soul, but it's also benefited from expanding it.
Listening to the Eve of the War, even now on vinyl and indeed the digital version, it has a resonance that kind of just sort of seems to grip the sort of the inner soul and just transport one into all sorts of wonderful ways. I'm sure that Herbert George Wells himself was around. He would have said, actually, yes, it does kind of capture that sense of end of the 19th century, the sort of sense of anticipation that we actually felt there, and also the fear that obviously alien invasion and indeed a superior civilization can actually have if it should come into contact with us puny humans, really.
Yeah, when you look at it, that H.G. Wells wrote it as a young man at the height of the British Empire and its expansionism, and the fact that in Victorian times, what would we have defended ourselves with but rifles, some cannons, and a few good warships, but against an alien being that was all brain, the size of a bear, and incredible machines and weaponry, that fear factor that you're talking about to me was always much more terrifying if I set it in the time and stayed true to what H.G. Wells created. And I think that helped convince the listener that this sort of not a fair playing field existed, and it therefore made it scarier.
And suddenly the ooh-la sound, which, I mean, most people would obviously remember as synonymous with the whole thing. The late astronomer, of course, Sir Patrick Moore, who I spoke to, and I was fortunate enough to speak to on many occasions, was, I know, quite a fan of the whole piece. So, obviously, there wasn't a place to fit in his xylophone playing into War of the Worlds, but maybe he'd still been around. We could have done something.
You never know.
Indeed. And indeed, one recalls a piece I did with Sue Mann Hennick from the dance troupe Legs & Co., when even then I thought it would have made a nice little line to do a sort of ballet version. It took a long time, of course, before you got into the notion of the stage show. But when that whole idea came up of actually going on stage, was it a case of you thought, well, this is going to be a brave attempt, or did you think, yes, let's run with it?
Well, it was sort of an evolution in that when the first time the album came out and was flying high in the charts, there were opportunities for me to take it on tour, but the offers were generally more of concert renditions. And I always saw that the vision, the H.G. Wells vision, and what I had hoped to extend through the musical version, was a big stage type of concept, something that, in fact, didn't exist in those early years, and the few spaces that did, and I'm excluding stadiums, the cost of bringing to an audience what was sort of in my mind, either technologically it didn't exist, or that which did exist was so limited and also so expensive that it really needed time to catch up with offering technology in a way that allowed us to do what we started doing in 2006. And interestingly, even now, looking back after 8.5 years of touring, every production has grown. Technology, even in this period of time, has changed substantially, which is why every production is essentially adding new ingredients, topping the previous production, and replacing what even now is our older technologies with brand new ones.
From the department of where you never can actually tell where genius will emerge from, I couldn't believe that the Forever Autumn part, the hook because you're not here, actually started off as a jingle for a Lego commercial.
Yeah, that's right. It is one of those remarkable things of where something or the seed of something starts. It wasn't sung in the sense of with words. It was more like a Simon and Garfunkel, and when they used to go do-do-do-do, and that sort of vocal approach. But it was essentially the first verse of what then became a full-blown song called Forever Autumn. It started off because the public started writing in, what is that piece of music? Never realizing that it was resonating so much to the general public as it was, as you said, it was supporting a Lego toys commercial. But it did, and the two singers that were on it also became a vocal duo, and they wrote a whole album's worth of songs. They wrote the lyrics, I wrote the music and did the arrangements and the productions, and one of those songs on their debut album was Forever Autumn.
Indeed. Now, as we said at the start, Jeff, the final arena tour, I'm choking as I say that, because I can't believe this can't be the end. It could only be the end of the beginning, perhaps. But clearly, throughout November, some fantastic, it's the Dublin O2 Arena on the 27th of November, the Liverpool Echo Arena on the 28th, the Glasgow-based 29th, Manchester Phones for You Arena on the 30th, and of course, Nottingham on December the 2nd, the Capital FM Arena, and then of course, December the 3rd, you're up in Newcastle. So you're getting around Birmingham, of course, Leeds, Cardiff, Bournemouth, London, Brighton, and Amsterdam also appear on the list. Shane Ward, an interesting addition to the cast in many ways.
Shane and all the others, with the exception of Jason Donovan, are all new to this particular production. Mm. And with every live production that we've done, or even going back to the original album or the more recent recording, it's always about trying to find artists who are obviously highly talented that fit the roles, the material that they're being asked to consider, and then you have the process of trying to reach them, seeing if they're interested, and whether there's a way of making it happen. And I've been very fortunate on all these occasions to wind up with tremendous people that have been great fun to work with, and always, because they're pretty successful in their own careers, they add their own sort of approach and magic to each role, and Shane being one of them.
Well, certainly the voice of the artilleryman, or the artilleryman, the character, the line that was used, which certainly I found very evocative with the days of David Essex, where it's thinking and doing the working that's the really hard part. So it's wonderful in that sense of word. Clearly H.G. Wells wrote other texts, and there are other sort of areas. I mean, we've got The Time Machine, we've got Island of Dr. Moreau, we've got The Invisible Man, we've got Things to Come. Were you ever tempted to actually select another H.G. Wells text to actually work your magic on?
It's a good question. After The War of the Worlds was released, the publisher of the majority of H.G. Wells' works sent me a big box of first editions of pretty much everything that they had published of H.G. with exactly that same question. Fancy having a go with another one of H.G.'s stories. And there were a couple in there that are brilliant, but almost all of them, The Time Machine being one of them, the rights were sold off years ago. And it's not a straightforward thing, if something is in copyright, to just say, right, I'm going to do that one. You have to go through the process of checking out and trying to do a deal, so to speak. The other thing is that when I read The War of the Worlds, unlike many other books I was reading at the time to try to find a subject and something I felt passionate about in the way of a story that I could compose and produce a musical interpretation to, is that The War of the Worlds specifically was actually quite a short story. And on one read, I could hear all the spaces where music could start contributing, rather than some wonderful books. But they were far longer, therefore more detailed and complex to sort of penetrate, to open up into a musical interpretation. So for one reason or another, I didn't move on with another H.G. Wells story, but I have done others, and I'm always looking for a story that one can feel passionate about, feel that there's a relevance into the world we live. And interestingly enough, when H.G. Wells wrote this in 1897, he was taking a serious pop at the expanding British Empire about invading another man's land as being something he didn't completely agree with, one's faith and questioning one's faith as to being, you know, the sort of person that you would go to, a man of the cloth that you go to for spiritual and moral comfort. And somehow H.G. created, who we turned into a parson, played by originally Phil Lynott, as the first person that goes bonkers. He gives up all hope and faith. And I think those resonated to me as issues of the day, of themes that historically have been. And now you look at the world we live in, and it's only magnified. So I think overall I was always looking for something that had great excitement and a simple story in its basic outline, but something that also had a deeper and greater relevance to the world we live in. So finding stories, or certainly in my experience, are not easy or straightforward.
Looking at some of these statistics, of course, from the show itself, we have leaf drops over the audience, surround sound that engulfs them. We have, of course, the 100-foot-wide animation wall, Liam Neeson in full body interacting with the show's live performers. 3D holography, of course, is there. And, needless to say, 35-foot-tall Martian fighting machines firing real flame heat rays. Unbelievable!
It is. That's another item that has kept evolving in the years we've been touring, because it's a machine that H.G. Wells created and described, and we visualized it originally as a painting that came with the original double album. And since we've been touring, it has been this very giant and amazing kit of engineering that, about half an hour into the story, because it's been hiding in the lighting rig, it lands on stage and is firing its main weapon, which now is a five-plumed flame that shoots out over the audience, and it is truly compelling. You definitely feel the heat pretty much wherever you're sitting. It is safe. We haven't lost too many members of the audience.
I was going to say, you could have very frightened people in Nottingham and Newcastle. Goodness knows what could happen there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're on stage underneath it. I'm conducting right underneath it. It spans probably three-quarters of the stage, and it's three legs and 3 tons are very carefully placed where we are not, but it's a tight fit. And I now, particularly with these real flames, understand why its first name is Heat, as in heat ray.
Jeff, I remember with great excitement when I actually picked up I'm chronologically gifted enough to remember, as I say, the first release of the album. I thought, this is something special here, something magical. Little did I think, even at that stage, we would have actually been talking about something which has sold over 15 million records, two UK Ivor Novello Awards, and of course won the US Best Recording in Science Fiction and Fantasy with, of course, Alfred Hitchcock, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, who are kind of, they've developed their own sort of line in various ways, obviously always good. And of course, a Rock Showman of the Year award for your good self, Classic Rock Showman of the Year. The Magic Stuck Edition, which is why I can't believe this is the last. Surely say it ain't so, Jeff. It can't be.
Well, as we know, it's certainly in the UK, it is going to be the final arena tour, but it's not for a negative reason. It's in fact for a very positive one, which early to mid next year we'll be able to announce the direction that we're going in the immediate future. I'm very excited about it. It's a different way of presenting the War of the Worlds. It won't have me on stage conducting, as has been a privilege for 8.5 years, but it's a new direction, and I hope it will excite audiences in its own way. But it's going to be a different direction. So it's not goodbye, it's just hello in a different way.
Marvellous. TheWarOfTheWorlds.com, of course, is the go-to website. I'll echo, of course, some of the lines that have been shared here. Newcastle Evening Chronicle, a veritable feast of live stage and musical brilliance. And indeed, from Liverpool Echo, Wayne's music has never sounded more commanding. genuinely, Jeff, as I said at the start, it's been a privilege to actually share some thoughts with your good self about the fabulous War of the Worlds. As you might have just gathered from my enthusiasm about the whole thing, I just think it's fantastic. It's brilliant. You know, they're very good in every sense of the word, and genuinely endorse that. So we've got two final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut here on the Midweek Drive? Has it been okay for you?
On the what drive?
The Midweek Drive. Has it been okay?
Oh, sorry. Absolutely. I wasn't sure what you said there. I thought we were talking about a Formula One racetrack there.
There you go. It's just the radio program to work it in its own way. Has it been okay for you?
It's been delightful, and thank you for all the super words you said.
Oh, well, the next critical question, Jeff, is can we look forward to hopefully in the very near future featuring you again and actually keeping us updated, not only with obviously the War of the Worlds, but other exciting things you're involved with?
It would be an absolute pleasure.
Jeff Wayne, we salute you. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you, too.
Through autumn's golden gown, we used to kick our way. You always love this time of year. Those fallen leaves lie undisturbed now, 'cause you're not here.
Few male authors can write about romance in a way which appeals to women, but Coles has managed it quite brilliantly. Kim is a rookie reporter in the heart of the Cotswolds, learning his trade and desperate for love. But there's only one woman he wants, the beautiful, ethereal, unobtainable Sasha. Men throw themselves at Sasha. Every week they're buying her flowers and offering her champagne. And if Kim would win her heart, then he must do something completely different. After a year of cool courtship, and after the pair have nearly drowned, Kim makes his move, and they fall helplessly, hopelessly in love. Kim's got everything he wants. Sasha has too. For this love-struck couple, life doesn't get any better. They've got everything going for them, and they've got everything to lose. Only the perfect way to come out of Jeff Wayne's piece there, although I do think confusing the Midweek Drive with a Formula One setup is just, Jeff, please, you know, we'll work on that. It's William Coles, Bill Coles, back with us, of course, ace writer, of course, and holding your current edition of The Woman Who Dared to Dare in my left hand, Bill, left hand.
Oh, excellent. Why in your left hand rather than your right hand?
Because my right hand is holding a pen. There we are. In case you're just wondering, you know, I know what you saucy tabloid journalists and your ways. Harley Parker would like to say, "Hi Alex, I'm really sorry, but I can't be there tonight. Hope the show goes well. Please tell William Coles I loved Mr. Two Bombs." Holly, Two Bomb.
Well, that was very sweet of her. Thank you, Holly.
Sorry. From Emma Tinson, "Alex, I'm really sorry, but I'm not feeling very well today, so I don't think I'll make it to TMD tonight." It's Midweek Drive. "I hope the show goes well, and please tell William Coles that I am really enjoying his book, Mr. Two Bomb. I'm up to chapter 10 at the moment, and I'm loving his descriptive narrative. Best wishes, Emma."
Fantastic. Glad they're liking it.
And from Kat in the studio, "It tells it like it is." You're there, Kat. So you can actually say that actually, Red Top, it's all sort of there, isn't it?
Red Top, "It tells it like it is." What a story.
Tells it like it is.
Right. Okay. Yes. I hope it tells it like it is. It's tabloid journalism, red in tooth and claw.
Exactly. The rock photography legend that is Nick Elliott has been with us now for 1 hour 31 minutes, Bill. That's even longer than you spent with me in a studio. I mean, I know we've got an aggregate score here, but it's quite phenomenal in its own right.
Nick, have you made him a cup of tea yet and generally ingratiated yourself?
No, I don't. I'm not a party. Oh, I don't
partake.
A tea.
Oh, no. Tea.
We had a coffee. We had a coffee earlier on.
You don't do tea.
We had a coffee earlier on, Bill.
You know, rock and roll.
You don't do tea.
I don't do tea, man.
You certainly did tea when I was there.
Now, oh, I think Alex does tea.
We do tea.
He looks like a tea man.
Well,
he looks like a builder's mug tea.
Oh,
man.
No. It's not British tea. It can rot the synovial fluid in the arterial joints. Business. Oh, right, bad for the arthritis. Then. Bad for the arthritis.
Marvellous. I'm sure you can get stuff for that.
Yeah, stop drinking tea.
WD-40 or
herbal tea, of course. Very good.
Herbal tea.
And, of course, we've got the fabulous soul who, I'll say it one more time because she deserves this. Last week she wasn't on the show because she was down in London meeting the Duke of Edinburgh to receive her gold Duke of Edinburgh award at St. James Palace. Isn't that right, Jessica Timpson?
Yes.
And what did the Duke of Edinburgh say to you?
He certainly said, it's Jessica Ward, not Emma Tinson. You've confused the names again. Sorry about that, Jessica. We'll get it sorted
That's
out.
Okay.
I could sense your mum shouting down the radio, he can't even remember my daughter's name.
Oh, no, he didn't personally talk to me, but he was very, very cheeky. He was going around saying, Merry Christmas and all sorts.
That Duke of Edinburgh and his happy ways.
He is. But no, he was very interested in, like, if people had been abroad for the Duke of Edinburgh, or if, for some reason, he was very interested if anybody had done any sailing. Supposedly that's a big hobby of his. Unfortunately, I didn't do sailing.
Did you not sail from New Zealand to England, though?
No. I know, I had the chance, but
if you're going to be a war reporter, that's a possibility.
It is, yes, yeah.
Yes. Icons amongst journalistic profession for Jessica Ward include Marie Colvin.
Yes, Marie Colvin.
Colvin, exactly.
She's such an inspiration.
There you are.
So, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say Bill Coles, personally, because that's
the
shark teeth, but, you know.
Well, I didn't lose an eye or get shot in a war zone. I mean, I have a complete phobia of the thought of going off to a war zone. You're not going to get me in a war
zone. But, Bill, you
had
to have a burger with Ivana Trump. Surely it's equally as traumatic.
Donald thought so.
Yes.
The old ones are the better ones. Anyway, yes.
There weren't any bombs flying around or anything like that. So do you actually want to get off to a war zone then, if you admire Mary Colvin?
I would love to have the chance to get into a war zone, but it's early days.
We're starting off with Hello Scream at the York Maze on Saturday.
Yes,
who knows
what
that's going to lead to. I did suggest Edinburgh possibly, but you know, Lord knows. But exciting times there. So anyway, as we'd obviously intended to talk about Mr. Two Bomb, but clearly the two readers of the book are not in the studio. We're going to have to postpone that yet again, you know, in terms of that. But you do have the chance, actually. I mean, Nick, as he's ace at coming up with copywriting material, because, of course, that's part of the joy that Bill Cole's brought to the world of journalism, maybe he might have a thought. Perhaps you'd like to describe, for the benefit of Bill and maybe any late-arriving listeners, what the show that you're going to be hosting on Siren, hopefully, you know, with various other things, is going to be called, and how, you know, because we'll look for a title here. Tell Bill what it's all about.
Tell me all about it, Bill. There's actually two parts to it. The first bit's going to be a drive time.
Single of the fortnight, rock and roll.
That's it. We're going to talk about a single, one of my favourites.
People that he's actually worked with, William.
And people I've actually worked with, William.
Such as, he might know some of the names. You know, roll out some of the names that are actually there.
You know, I just have a bit of a thing that you're sitting there listening to a drive time programme amongst oodles of vehicles and people, you're ready for home, and it's always been a true delight to listen to a track that suddenly plays on the radio and you think, oh God, that was fantastic, you know. So I'm going to try and bring that to your drive time slot each fortnight.
Well, brilliant. Yeah, I mean, if you can tie in an anecdote of the star who sang or was involved with the single, and you know, and you're having a little meander down memory lane. Yeah, that's going to work brilliantly.
That's exactly what it's going to be. We're going to talk about, you know, the stuff that I've done with these people and, you know, kind of how the gig went.
We've
laughs and giggles, etc.
Status Quo, Kaiser Chiefs, Kappa Kaylee,
yeah, I mean,
Cara Dillon.
You've got to dish the dirt, though. I mean, we don't want, you know, that was such a good laugh and we got drunk one night. No, I mean, we want smut, you know. The spicy stuff. You can't pull your punches on this one.
Expletives deleted, but Kat is almost having a sort of an attack of nerves as the publicist in the studio here. You know, you've given her a strange turn there, William, you know? Yes, please. But yeah, so there's that, and then there's the hour-long
then
show,
the hour-long show, which is literally going to be the tracks of Nick's years, which is the albums that have influenced me, why I do what I do, and these guys that are my heroes and are the people that have made me what I am today.
And are you going to be getting any of them, any of your old buddies back on the show? And
that's highly possible. That's highly possible.
And then they can dish the dirt about their mates.
You're still after that dirt, Bill, aren't you?
Long live free
press, that's what I say. Long live free press.
The press is there.
Saren is going to become required listening for all the tabloid papers in London as they're waiting for the next amazing bombshell exclusive to come from your show.
Yeah, well, there's no Paxman now, you see, so we're going to do something and lift the bar a bit.
So you are going to be Lincoln's Paxo.
We could look into
from
that.
From Norwich. It's brilliant, you know. It's definitely a sort of win in every sense of the word. Astoundingly, we've got our Los Angeles guy waiting to sort of come to us. Brilliant stuff. Jessica, those last two questions, which actually William hates, but I know you're going to deliver them in any sense.
No, I love them.
Do
you? I love them.
Very enthusiastic.
Go, Jessica, go.
Did you enjoy this midweek drive?
No, I didn't enjoy it. I loved it. I always love it.
And will we be hearing from you soon?
Yes, I do hope so. I mean, the very moment that Alex calls me up and invites me on, I start quivering, you know, like like Pavlov's dog, you know, with excitement and the thrill of what's going to happen next.
Well, there you are. And I say, The Woman Who Dared Today, Dared to Dare, available now, of course. We'll be talking about that. Mr. Tubal, etc. I would have suspected probably about 2 weeks from now, Bill Coles, William Coles. A round of applause.
Thank you.
Smith.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, as always.
Je n'ai pas oublié. Les feuilles mortes ramassent à la pelle. Les souvenirs et les regrets aussi.